This is Joseph C. Smith and his orchestra performing the Missouri Waltz from the Vintage Victor labels. You're listening to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. Hoi, hoi, hoi. I'm Jeff Ryan.
I stepped on your hoi, hoi.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were done with it. You held it all along.
Yeah. Sometimes I like to keep it in the barrel a little bit. Okay.
This is a Missouri Waltz, huh?
Yes.
You know how to waltz? Can you waltz?
It's like a one, two, three. What I can do is like walk in a triangle and kind of make triangles as I'm walking around. I'm sure it's not a proper waltz, but as long as no one's looking at my feet, it kind of resembles a waltz.
Let's dance.
We're going to waltz?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We actually are waltzing right
yes.
now. One, okay. two. See, I'm leaving, so you
okay.
go back.
Okay.
And to the end. Uh-huh. Hope your kids don't come down right now. That'd be weird, huh?
Well, this is something that you'd see in World War I, World War II movies. Like at a
Stalag 17 thing?
Exactly. I was thinking Stalag 17, which is what I was thinking of. Yeah. Like a bunch of guys and they play some music. And any dames around, guys just gotta dance with other guys.
Stalag 17 is always like my grandfather's gay reference. Like if my grandfather saw something gay, like, hey, it's Stalag 17 over here. I didn't really know what that was, but I don't even think I realized it was like a war movie.
Yeah,
I think in my mind I knew it was a movie.
Okay,
because he always uses the reference gay stuff.
Yeah,
I assumed it was like basically gay porn, like the gay porn that my grandfather saw years ago with Stalag 17. It was the gayest thing he had ever seen, I guess, because it had men dancing in it.
Yeah. Okay, so even back then in the 50s or 60s, it was considered, like, ultra that guys were dancing. I always thought because of, like, Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, they'd always be dressing up as women and seducing each other.
You know, I don't know. Is it possible my grandfather didn't know, like, what gay sex was? Like, he thought, that's what gay people did with each other? Like sodomy was something he was just unaware of. Like, how would you know?
Yeah.
You know?
It was just dancing.
Yeah, just got together and you dance.
No one sat him down and had the bird and the bees talk.
Yeah.
Sometimes when a man and a woman love each other very much.
The bee and the bee. Right? I'm assuming that in the birds and the bees world, the men the bees and the women birds?
Oh, I think it's like, this is how birds do it, this is how bees do it. So it's the two different examples of different fauna and how they procreate. But,
and neither of them the same way as humans, really, so...
No one ever says when a queen human falls in love with one of the many worker drones, but the worker drones don't have working genitals, so that's not going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a... And, shoot. This is where if I knew a lot more about ant...
Bees.
Ant and bee reproduction, I'd be able to bring in that knowledge. I don't have that knowledge. I can't make those jokes. If I was, like, writing this, I'd say, hold on a second, I'll be back... In 20 minutes, I'm going to have educated myself on bee sex.
And you're going to kill. You're going to kill on the bee sex.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found the references that people are going to actually understand the words of just enough to laugh hard.
No, see, I guess my way of interpreting it was always that, like, birds and the bees were sexually attracted to one another.
So okay. So it would be a bird having sex with a bee.
Your version makes so much more sense.
It's one of those things you don't ever question.
I never thought about it, yeah.
Right. Okay, here's my example of that. Growing up, I lived on a street called Beach Spring Road.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of the hill were a bunch of beech trees growing out of a spring. Never connected the two. Not mm-hmm. until like I was in college, years after I moved out, I was like, that beach, the spring with the beaches... Next to the sign that said Beach Spring Road. Do you think? They didn't just have that sign that this would be a good place to put that sign. This pre-made sign.
How did I never realize this?
I moved there when I was a kid. I didn't realize that words meant things. Okay, we need to move on to our advertiser this week, our sponsor, which is Colt. Colt's Firearms. This is an actual ad from the 1917 era. Once in every man's life, what happened to him may happen to you. The Automobilist's story.
The what?
I'm trying that again. The Automobilist's Story.
Oh, all right. Automobilist.
Yes.
That was, I don't know what you were saying there. Oh, my.
Just as we came over the hill, two thugs with murderous-looking clubs sprang out of the darkness. But when I flashed my Colt, they disappeared in a jiffy. Of course, that saved us. But believe me, the Colt is a mighty necessary part of an automobile equipment nowadays. I wouldn't be without one in my car. You're reliable to have the same experience any time. Why not equip your car with a Colt? You can't forget to make a Colt safe. Colt's Patent Firearms and Manufacturing Company, Hartford, Connecticut.
Wow. So the idea is like, all right, you have a car now, and you definitely need a gun if you're going to have a car.
You need a gun in every car.
I feel like most car, like how much carjacking is going on in 1917? Like, if somebody like tried to take your car, like, I think you could probably chase your car down.
Do you know carjacking came from my town? The first use of the word carjacking was...
Oh, I guess it was by a guy named Jack, and you never put two and two together.
No, I heard that it was from South Orange, the town I grew up in, where Beach Spring Road is, and there was someone who had been robbed at gunpoint of their car, and they needed to have a word to describe it, and instead of hijacking, they decided to say carjacking, and now that's a common thing. I'm sure people had been saying, get out of that car for, 100 years, mm-hmm. so long as there were guns and cars.
So they go, we had a car taking.
Yeah, a car taking. But a carjacking makes it sound like it's like the hijacking version, but no one ever steals a plane to get a plane. You know, you hijack a plane to get somewhere
get
else.
Somewhere, yeah. There, yeah. Just to get. You know what? I just realized I had a very similar thing to your Beach Spring Road.
Uh-huh.
That this is something I just found out in the past year.
Oh, okay.
All right. Disco fries.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not, we're both from New Jersey.
Yes.
So we know what disco fries are. If you're from out of the area, you may not know.
Disco fries are French fries with cheese sauce and also gravy.
Cheese sauce?
Sometimes it's cheese sauce.
Is that cheese sauce? Where have you gone?
Every diner.
It's mozzarella.
Sometimes it's mozzarella. Sometimes it's just a slice of cheddar.
They're doing it wrong then.
I'm sure they're doing it wrong. I don't doubt they're doing it wrong.
Dump are you going to? No, well, either way, it's mozzarella and gravy. We're going to put together.
Yeah.
Now,
health food.
Yeah. So my friend, we're talking about it, and he's like, oh, it's disco fries because that's what you would have late at night. You're drunk, and you need, some soak up all the booze after you've been at a disco.
After you come to a disco.
I thought for years that it was because you had the white cheese
mm-hmm.
and the brown gravy, and it's like a disco where the brown people and the white people intermingle.
You thought it was a statement of
yeah
of the carefree diversity?
Yeah, the carefree disco.
Wait, so what are the French fries then?
That's that's the dance floor.
The French fries are the dance floor. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
French fries are the dance floor where the white mozzarella people
mix it up with the brown gravy.
The brown gravy people. And they create something delicious together.
Now, could you make like the whole village people of disco fries? Could you put in like tomato sauce in order to bring
the
Native Americans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, the red man, as you call him, not me. But you call him. Scumbag.
Okay, we're going on to news.
When I figured out, like, oh, that makes a lot more sense, I couldn't figure out, am I, like, brilliant for thinking of something bigger or the world's dumbest man?
I think it's like a Carl Pilkington thing, where you're a little bit of both. Your brain doesn't work the way other people's brains work. Mm. That's not necessarily positive in every instance. but in this case, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, this week, was it this day? Oh, okay. On March 5th, 1917, Woodrow Wilson gets sworn in as the President mm-hmm. of the United States. The swearing in March, it wasn't until the 1920s that they moved the ceremony, the swearing in for the inauguration, back to January, like the second January,
mm-hmm.
the second Saturday in January.
Why?
I think because it was closer to when the election was. So you didn't have like a 4-month period with a lame duck president. You only had like a 6-week period.
Mm-hmm.
But I like a march inauguration. I think that's a lot better. Would you rather stand outside on a day like this?
Yeah, weather's a little bit nicer. I mean, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
You always hear stories about, William Henry Harrison, dying from being out during the inauguration.
Right, and because he didn't want to wear a coat, and
my speech was like 47 hours long or something like that.
I'm not sure if that's actually true. I'm sure on some level it's been debunked, but then someone has written a counter-argument to debunking to say, no, actually it is true. But I think they're all just pulling DNA samples from a dead president and trying to figure out what killed him and what may have led to it instead, and maybe it was a bad doctor.
But in the DNA samples we found, we couldn't find any samples of a coat in here, so that must be it. There's
evidence of absence. Our main story this week is not about World War Woodrow Wilson, but, well, it kind of is, because it deals with America, it deals with Mexico, it deals with Germany, it deals with all of the Scandinavian countries. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the Zimmermann Telegraph. Now, Zimmermann Telegraph is how the U.S. got into World War I. Ever since the U.S. was neutral, and in 1915, that was when the Lusitania sunk. That was due to the Germans, the German U-boats. And for like the next year and a half, they just started to sink more and more of Allied shipping. British stuff, U.S. stuff. And we just said, okay, fine. We don't want to be in the war. And they started to call our bluff, saying, well, if you're not going to be in the war, you won't be in the war if we do this. And they sink the ship. And I'm like, no. So it's like that scene in a movie where the bad guys start breaking the good guy's store. And the good guy can't do anything because he doesn't want his family to get beaten up. But the Zimmermann Telegraph is what ultimately got us into the war. We're not in the war in March, but by April we will be in the war.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned for that episode.
we're going to have to pull out all the stops. And then I'm not sure if like the whole rest of the year is just war. All we're going to talk about is war from now on.
I really hope not.
No.
No, we're not that knowledgeable to make it interesting every week.
No, but maybe we need to. Maybe we need to put on our war hats. Are war hats a thing?
Only if it's literally a war hat. If we're literally putting on war hats.
those wok-looking things that World War One guys
wear. I'll be the German, so I'll have the point on mine.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we get like
a pickle howitzer.
Yeah, like I figure like a baker's shop you can get that at, right?
Yeah, probably.
All right, well, go on with the Zimmermann.
Okay, so I want to say George Zimmermann, but it's not.
No, it's not.
George Zimmermann. No,
it's not. Yeah, that guy evil for so many years. Starting with... going all the way back to 1917.
He's actually immortal. He's been responsible for everything bad.
Like, in that case, you would be like, look, he's not racist. That's just the way they were back then. He's, he's stuck in his ways. He's 140 years old.
Okay, so Arthur Zimmermann is the Zimmermann we're talking about. He was some sort of German ambassador, and he needed to send a message not to the U.S. but to Mexico. But because so many of the telegraph wires were cut down, he didn't have many options in order to send a message. And it had to be a coded message, because you're going to find out this is not something you want anyone else other than Germany and Mexico to read. And he eventually struck a deal with the U.S. that said, I need to send a coded message to America, and then America will then wire it down to Mexico. Please don't read it. And Americans basically said, okay, we won't read it. But along the way, our allies, the English, read it, and it was encoded. But they had a group in Room 40. Room 40 was the name of their code-breaking group. And they read it, and they decoded it. And then they came up with an elaborate backstory that said that the Germans had used, like, three different methods in order to get the information from A to B to C to D to E, which was Mexico City. And
what was the gist of this telegram?
Okay, I'm going to read the whole telegram because, it's a telegram. It's not that big.
But you have to say stop between each line, okay?
Okay. Here's a decoded telegram. Well, I could read the unencoded telegram. The unencoded telegram is 17042, 17043, 8005. Yeah, you get the message. It's just a bunch of numbers. The unencoded telegram, which I believe was in English, because I guess that was their, they didn't want to say it in German or in Spanish, so they decided English is a universal language of spycraft.
No, and I thought it was love. I thought love was a universal language.
Okay. Should I do this in a German accent? Would that help?
If it's anything like your other accents, it won't help, but go for it.
It'll sound remarkably like every other accent I've ever done. We intend to begin on the 1st of February unrestricted submarine warfare. Achtung. See, instead of stop.
Stop, no, true. Yeah. That's good.
We shall endeavor, in spite of this, to keep the United States of America neutral. Achtung. In the event of this not succeeding, we make Mexico a proposal of alliance on the following basis. Make war together, make peace together, generous financial support and an understanding on our part that Mexico is to reconquer the lost territory in Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. Achtung. The settlement in detail is left to you, Achtung. You will inform the president of the above most secretly as soon as the outbreak of war with the United States of America is certain, and add the suggestion that he should, on his own initiative, invite Japan to immediate adherence and at the same time mediate between Japan and ourselves, Achtung. Please call the president's attention to the fact that the ruthless employment of our submarines now offers the prospect of compelling England in a few months to make peace, Achtung. Signed, Zimmerman.
Huh. So he was proposing an alliance with Mexico. Mexico would get Arizona. Yeah,
yes, Mexico and the U.S. are both neutral at this point. Germany was saying, Mexico, hey, come to our side. We will give you everything the U.S. took. You'll get New Mexico back. You'll get Arizona back. You can get Texas back. Sure, we'll throw Texas in. And in exchange, you can fight a 2,000-mile border with a country that's 8 times more powerful than you.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a good deal?
This doesn't make a good deal for Mexico here.
No, it doesn't. So that was one of the many reasons why they decided not to do it. But they did consider the deal. They did consider it. Then they realized the U.S. was stronger. Even if Mexico ends up winning, then they have a huge unfriendly neighbor right next to them, and that's not a good deal for them. And they also didn't believe that Germans would be able to back up their own claim, because Germany was not in the greatest position right now. They pulled half the world into war, and now they're trying to pull the other half into war. And they were running out of money, so it's not, you know, it's like if someone offered you a free car, and all you had known was they'd offered other cars to other people and hadn't given them cars, you probably would think, you know, this guy offering me a free car doesn't actually have a car to offer me.
And who wants Arizona that much anyway?
I've never,
at the time, you know,
I've never,
Texas has some value to it.
Yeah. I've never been to Arizona. I've been to more of the states than I haven't, but I've never made it to the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been there?
Let me think. I have not gone to Arizona.
Oh, wow.
No, never did Arizona or New Mexico. I've been to Old Mexico.
The original recipe Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been to that Mexico. But not the new one.
Ah. So that message was sent on January 19th, which would be like our third or fourth week of a show.
There wasn't the military leader there. It was Pancho Villa, right?
He was a revolutionary, and they couldn't find him. And he had just run off into the hills. And they didn't know if he was alive or dead. And
he had something to do during World War I, though, right?
No, this was beforehand. We almost got into a war with Mexico, and we were patching up those relations. And we had just started to have relations with Mexico again. So Germany was tempting Mexico at a time when Mexico really wanted to be friends with America. So this was another reason why they're like, you know, we just don't want to start a fight that we're not going to win for a reason, because someone who we don't even know wants us to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the right call on their part, and for our part too, because we don't want to have a war with Mexico any more than Mexico wants to have a war with us.
But here's a little embarrassing thing.
Okay.
This isn't recent. I was a kid. I was still technically a kid. I thought Pancho Villa was fictional for years.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I thought he was when I heard people say Pancho Villa, I assumed he was like Don Quixote or Frito Bandito or something. I didn't know that he was like an actual person, because I feel like he was never referenced in a real way.
Right.
Like, no one ever talked about like what Pancho Villa did or anything. They just, mm-hmm. It was a reference to somebody with a big mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot of gaps in people's knowledge about this. I remember I had a friend who was Greek, And we were hanging out at his house, and we were getting to see the new James Bond movie. And his dad was there, and his dad was, like, actually from Greece and spoke with a heavy accent. And I figured, well, everyone knows James Bond. He's a universal character. And he's Greek, and Britain is closer to Greece than America, so maybe he knows it better than I do. So as we're leaving, the father says, James Bond, very good, very good. Same actor, 40 years, amazing. And in that little sentence, I realized he's never seen a James Bond movie. He is under the impression James Bond is the name of an actor who plays in a bunch of spy movies.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that he knew enough to know who James Bond was, but not enough to get it right. He got it so wrong.
Do you think there's anybody in Mexico going like, hey, you know who's real? Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln was a real person.
I guess if you pick a certain, like every once in a while, it'll be a fictional character that ascends so much that they feel like they're a real person. And sometimes in vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Marco Polo might have been a fictional person. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
People say that that because he went and wrote a 400-page travel memoir about all of his time in China and all the things he learned, but never said anything about tea, that omission means that he couldn't have actually done it.
Tea would have come up.
Yeah, tea would have come up. The same way that if you went to Japan and never mentioned fish, you'd be like, wait, they're on an island. How is anyone eating if you're not going to mention fish?
Before you move on, have you ever received a telegram in your life?
No, I don't know if people still can send telegrams.
Oh, can you?
Western Union is still around. I mean, that was what it was. You know, now we have faxes and filograms and all those. I've heard about this thing called email, but I'm scared of doing it because I heard that serial killers will kill you.
I mean, no, there had to be a time like when we were kids. There's no email when we were kids.
Right.
All right. You probably could still send a telegram at that point. There's probably still telegrams being floated around.
I have a bad idea that maybe the U.S. military still uses telegrams to inform the relatives of service members that their family member has died.
And it gets, delivered by courier right to the door.
Yeah. You know? And that's, the only thing Western Union does anymore, and it's the worst job in the world.
I remember back when I would deliver money. Fuck you, Venmo.
So, the telegram itself was sent on January 19th. The Brits got it right away. They decoded it, and they waited a month before they showed it to the U.S. And it leaked a month after that, in early March. And then it took one more month of it floating around in newspapers before the critical mass built. And we're like, okay, we have to go to war, because Germany is trying to get every other country that we touch to fight us.
Why not Canada?
Canada was already in World War I. Oh, sure,
yeah. They're still connected.
Yeah, the Canadians were more real men and more real women than us. So, we are now moving on to Nickelodeon, which we didn't do the last couple of weeks, for what I'm going to backtrack to say is a somewhat decent reason, which was that we talked about Mata Hari a couple of weeks ago. And there are a whole bunch of Mata Hari movies. So if you want to backdate your Nickelodeon, if you actually are watching these, you can watch. There's actually a TV show called Mata Hari that's airing right now in the Dutch Republic of Netherlands Stand. Or whatever the Holland country is.
The one with the windmills.
The one with the windmills, yes. And the chocolate and cheese and clogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's not a huge amount of Dutch history that everyone knows. And Mata Hari is a compelling character, so she gets her own TV show. So you could watch that. You can also go back and watch the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, because they had a Mata Hari episode. I watched Young Indiana
Jones. I picture you being way into this show. There's no other personality. Here's my guess. My guess is that there are two experts on this, and they are you and your brother.
We actually dropped out of watching the third season. Partly because they made it hard to watch.
I didn't know they had three seasons of this. If you ask me about the show, I'd be like, oh, I remember the show. It was probably on for three episodes.
Right. They had a first year, which was a really big deal, and then they came back for a second year. But they'd already, written and filmed the third year. And then they decided, you know what? This doesn't work as a TV show. We're going to make these into TV movies. We'll just take two episodes and put them together and film the old man, Indy, like wandering around a supermarket lost. And he's like, oh, this reminds me of my time in World War One. And then boom.
Would they really do that? Like you'd be like in they a really supermarket would. And like a watermelon would come like falling towards him and rolling towards him and it would make him like think about.
they didn't do anything that cheesy, but one time they did actually get Harrison Ford to do a flashback or flash forward or a bookend sequence, and he had a beard because I think it was around the time he was filming The Fugitive. But that was neat, that the one little bit of actual Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones that's not in a movie.
See, this is how you know that the fourth Indiana Jones is bullshit, because at some point old Indiana Jones would be like, oh yeah, also I met aliens. Like that would have come up at some point in when he's at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Like, I did all these great things, and you know, there were aliens too. You know, they mentioned how I survived a nuclear explosion in a fridge. They mentioned that to anybody?
If you actually had to sit down with, like, modern-day Indiana Jones, like the guy in his 90s, there's no way you'd believe anything he said.
Oh, yeah, just be full of shit.
Yeah. And I think he would know that, and he'd just start making things up. For all the things he actually did, he just throws stuff on top of it.
Might as well, because no one's leading any of this anyway.
Right, yeah. You know, I fought Theodore Roosevelt and a bear at the same time. And I had both hands tied behind my back. And my partner was Benjamin Franklin. Okay, celebrating a birthday this week is Will Eisner. Do you know who Will Eisner is?
Please, I do. Yes,
please. Okay, good.
I do, you comic book nerd.
The very first week, I think we touched on how I'm not going to be able to talk about comic books very much because 1917 is before comic books. But Will Eisner is Mr. Comic Book.
Mm-hmm.
He did so much to invent the genre, to renovate the genre, and he was still relevant right up until the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like his 90s and the 1990s. So a brief history about him.
I'm looking at it right now. Mm-hmm. I've never seen you this excited to talk about something. I'm looking at your posture, you popped up, you know.
I have done no prep for this. This is all off the dome. I live with Will Eisner.
You're semi-erect right now, aren't you? Just be honest.
Halfsies. Okay. So, he was born in Brooklyn. He was a Jewish immigrant. His parents came here from Poland or the Czech Republic or somewhere in Eastern Europe. And he wanted to become an artist. He got into the graphic arts. And he started to make a comic strip about the Spirit, which was like a, not quite a superhero, but he was like a noir guy. He had a hat, but he had a domino mask. And he went on adventures that weren't much more than finding a bad guy and punching him. He had no real skills. It was all the storytelling involved that was amazing about it.
They made a Spirit movie, right?
I never saw the Spirit movie.
But there is one, right?
There is a movie, yes. Yeah. And Frank Miller, the guy who drew 300 and Sin City, directed it, and he's never directed anything since, and it's apparently awful, because it just looks like all the worst parts of Sin City instead of the best parts of Will Eisner, and Eisner was so creative in his layouts. One of the things Spirit was famous for was they'd always write the Spirit in a different way, so it would be like a whole bunch of like piles of boxes in a warehouse, but they would all have different letters on them, and they'd spell out Spirit in the big splash page in the beginning. And that got copied by a lot of Marvel comics in the 60s, especially things that Jim Steranko did with Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I have to stop. I know.
Yeah. So I got to admit, I'm glazing over a little bit. Cause
okay.
I know a little bit about comic books.
Well, if I talk for another 6 hours, you'll know more. Okay, we're just going to go to the high points now. In World War II, he drew a bunch of World War II comics. He kept on drawing, left the industry, and he came back in the 70s, and he drew the first graphic novel. He drew a 200-page comic book that was not intended to be a bunch of issues that Marvel or DC put out. It was intended to be a bound book that people read, and it dealt with sophisticated themes. It dealt with people questioning God and their place in the world and if God exists.
Have you read this book?
Yes, I have it upstairs. It's called A Contract with God. And that gave a whole bunch of other people who were struggling to draw their Captain Marvel comics and, you know, make it seem relevant. And they're 55-year-old still trying to pound it out with this sort of art form. They realize, oh, I can just tell whatever story I want. I don't need to do it with superheroes. And I don't need to do it 22 pages at a time. And I don't even need to use panels.
Did he write also, or is he just...
Yeah, he wrote too. He was a big fan of not using panels. So he would have like a standard 6-panel grid where you can figure out where your eye goes, but he just wouldn't have the panels. So it felt more like individual drawings that were living and could like wander around a little bit.
I'm not a comic book guy, but I was a big Mad Magazine guy.
Okay.
Did he draw anything for Mad also? Am I remembering that right?
I bet he did. I bet he did in the 60s. They got a lot of really
good guys. Well, it's not when I read it.
No. He wasn't drawing, but when you were reading it, you were reading like the Beverly Hills Cop 2 parodies.
Yes, exactly.
You know, they...
With Children of a Joe Besser Dog.
That joke is how Vinny and I like first met and bonded. One of us made a reference to Children of a Joe Besser God, which was a very obscure joke from the back cover of Mad Magazine.
Yes.
And the other one immediately got it and started to laugh. And was like, oh, okay, we share the same brain.
That's good to know. No other human being who knows this joke.
It was like a fake VHS club.
Yeah.
And they also had My Dinner with Andre the Giant.
Yep.
That one had an illustration. Andre the Giant holding a tiny fork. There wasn't an illustration for Children of a Joe Besser God.
Mm-hmm. There's also Snow White and the Seven Samurai.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I could remember more of them. I'm sure it's online somewhere. You can Google
it. I'm sure there's something also involving the word black.
Also having a birthday this week is Dinah Shore. Her birthday was March 1st, which is technically should have been in week 9, but I didn't find out about it until just today. I don't know much about Dinah Shore. I knew she was a singer and entertainer.
She showed in the 70s. Yeah. We don't
I know Burt Reynolds was a big fan of hers.
I think he dated her, right?
Yeah, and when she died, he had very kind words to say about her, which is always nice for someone.
Well, usually, you know, you don't expect people when Dinah Shore dies, like, finally I'm going to unleash my wrath against...
No, but now I'm...
Burt Reynolds is going to finally tell what he really thinks.
But if she was... She must have been like 90 or so when she died, but then he was a much younger man when he was dating her then.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, I never put two and two together. This was happening when I, you know, when you thought that anyone who's over 35 is basically in the same 35 to death age range.
Mm-hmm.
Also going on this week, this is going to tie into our quiz, Puerto Rico's citizens, based on the Jones Act, were given U.S. citizenship. Puerto Rico was a U.S. territory. It still is a U.S. territory. And there was a movement to give Puerto Ricans the right to vote. And Puerto Ricans were not happy about this, because with the right to vote comes the right to be drafted. And 1917, with the Zimmerman Telegraph, right when people were about to go into World War I, is not a good time to say, oh, by the way, anyone age 18 to 24, would you like to die in France? Come on over. So, in honor of not the the voting, because I still don't think Puerto Ricans are allowed to vote in elections, or they can vote but it doesn't count. It's some sort of BS rule like that. But in honor of that...
You vote but it doesn't count?
Yeah. Yeah, like in elementary school.
Like, it's basically like they're in the car with a fake steering wheel.
Yes.
Pretending to drive. That's them in a vote. Like, are their voting machines even plugged in? I'm just picturing just like unplugged. Like our voting machines we throw out. We're going to send them to Puerto Rico for their mock election that they're going to have.
Everyone writes down who they want to vote for president, and then we'll take this information and we'll put it in a very special place.
Well, I guess you're right. They don't have any electoral
No, they don't. Votes. No, and they're kind of stuck. There's a lot of terrible things happening with the Puerto Rican economy because they're not a state and they don't have the protections that you would have if you were a state and you had state senators and state governors in order to say, we're not going to do this in our state.
Are they still worried about being drafted?
They can enlist. They can volunteer. Okay, on to our quiz. 10 items by Puerto Rican's history, Puerto Rican's culture. The Arecibo Observatory is in Puerto Rico. It's a radio telegraph place. I went to Puerto Rico last year on vacation, and I got to see it and tour around. It's great. Which Jodie Foster movie does it appear in?
That's probably the one with the aliens, right? With the where they make contact with aliens.
Yes, you accidentally said it. The movie is Contact.
Oh, okay, good, good. Yeah, I meant that.
Yeah. It also showed up in GoldenEye and one or two other movies.
All right.
And it turns out they make a lot of movies in Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
because it just looks like a jungle atmosphere, but you can be like 20 minutes away from the nice big city in San Juan. Which Puerto Rican poet won a Pulitzer Prize and also practiced as a pediatrician in New Jersey for 40 years?
You know, I don't know poetry.
Hmm. I thought you might know this guy. He comes up as a Jersey guy.
And I know nothing about poetry.
Ah. William Carlos
Williams. Carlos Williams, yeah.
Yes. Okay, you did know him.
Okay.
Yeah. What is the nickname for someone of Puerto Rican heritage who grew up stateside, usually in the New York City area?
Boricua.
Ooh, close, close. New York Rican.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that word.
I don't know. I was a little nervous even saying Boricua. I gotta admit, I don't know if that's something that they can say and we can't. I'm not sure. We may have to edit that out.
Right. Puerto Ricans listening, we possibly apologize. We possibly don't. We don't know if that's offensive.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Or not. Which person of Puerto Rican descent currently serves on the Supreme Court?
That would be Sotomayor.
Yes, Sonia Sotomayor. Okay. Let me finish.
I mean, whoever was like David Souter. Like David Souter raised on the mean streets of San Juan.
Okay. Let me finish this whole question. A 1961 musical update of Romeo and Juliet about New York City street gangs. Let me finish. Features a white gang called the Jets and a Puerto Rican gang called the Sharks. Features Rita Moreno and a whole bunch of white people playing Puerto Ricans.
Oh, that's into the question.
Oh, this movie is called West Side Story.
Yeah.
Yes. It takes place in Lincoln Square, which was torn down to become Lincoln Center.
It's a quite a long question, by the way.
What play did I see at Lincoln Center a couple of years ago?
Let's see. What did you see there? War Horse.
Yes! Oh, my God! You got it right!
That's the only play I've seen at Lincoln Center, so I thought maybe it was the same one. That's all. I saw it there, too.
I so hoped I was going to fish hook you with this question, and you're going to just stop me and say, it's West Side Story. Shut up, it's West Side Story. And then I could show, no, I was looking for War Horse.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dining day.
When was that song in War Horse?
The horse sings it.
Oh, okay. The Jets and the Horses. Okay. Did you watch Community?
Yes.
Yes. A statue of what Puerto Rican actor appears in every episode of Community?
Oh, what's his name? Louis, God, I can't remember right now.
The guy in everything.
Yeah.
Yes, Louis Guzman.
Louis Guzman, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, this one I only learned because I was there last year. What fast food chain can basically only be found in Puerto Rico? There's 37 locations there, and it's just beginning to branch out into Florida.
I don't know this one.
Yeah. It's El Maison Sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
They're good sandwiches. Instead of lettuce, they put cabbage on top. So it has a lot of extra crunch. It's good. What was named the national beverage of Puerto Rico in 1978? And
Fresca.
No, it was invented there in 1954. It's an alcoholic beverage.
Oh. What would be invented as late as 1954? I don't know.
The pina colada.
No. I thought that's what I thought would have been much older than that.
Nope. Wasn't invented until 1954. Wow. There may have been other pineapple drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it wasn't until 1954 that someone said, we've had this pineapple juice sitting here after 200 years.
Let's throw some rum in there and see what happens. Yeah.
Speaking of rum, what Puerto Rican set novel was turned into a Johnny Depp movie a couple of years back?
Rum Diary.
Yes. And finally, last question. What 1960s TV show, set but not filmed in Puerto Rico, is still regarded as one of the dumbest TV shows of all time? I can't give you any more clues. Well, I mean, I could give you even more clues, but then it'd be too easy. A TV show from 1960s, still on the list of dumbest TV shows of all time.
My Mother the Car.
No, but that does make the list. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that the star is Sally Field.
Flying Nun.
Yes, okay. The Flying Nun. I remember when that and Gidget, for some reason, were on back-to-back, just mm-hmm. because I guess they were, you know, Sally Field was... still is a star.
Yeah.
And they got to see her when she was like 19 years old and couldn't say no to a contract. And if you hadn't seen the show, she literally flied because she wore like a wimple that had big wings on the side.
Yeah.
And it just picked her up and flew her around. And every episode would be like, oh, I need to get from one place to the other.
I've never seen a flyer. Did she like fight crime as a flyer?
No.
Was it just more about the convenience of travel?
It was always... like, oh, I need to help my friend, but he's all the way on the other side of the island, and there's this wind, and I'm on a cliff. How am I going to solve this problem? And like, oh, I'll just wander to the cliff, yeah. And then we'll cut to the same stock footage picture of a dummy flying across old San Juan. It was like Lassie in a way, in that it was basically the same story every single week. Mm-hmm. At least with Gidget, there was like, you know, so long as you include surfing, you tell any story you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Flying Nun was like the haunted tank, bringing back the comics one more time. There's only one story you can tell, and then you just get tired of it. That concludes this week's episode of 100 Years Ago Today. Join us next week. We will be talking about the Russian Revolution and Upton Sinclair. I can't believe we're at the Russian Revolution already. I hope we don't screw this up. But luckily, if we do screw it up, there turns out to be two Russian revolutions in 1917, so we have a second whack at it.
All right.
Okay, until next time, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.